I did speak to a former Secret Service, a special agent in charge named Bill Pickle. He protected Al Gore for a number of years. He said, look, you know, again, he says that these people save lives, but when you're in a situation like that, probably the best thing to do is either drop and roll, take some kind of cover, and get out of there if you can. I mean, that can at least best protect yourself, and that's really all you can do in a situation like that. You know, there's also a debate as to whether, you know, you can maybe bringing your own gun to these events might mitigate this. That's been talked about a lot since this happened.
Well, I know, and a lot of congressmen are now saying, hey, how do we react in these situations? We may be put in an uncomfortable place.
That's right. Two congressmen in particular, Jason Chaffetz from Utah and the Democrat Heath Shuler from North Carolina, have said that they're going to start carrying guns when they go back to their home district. Districts. Both have licenses to conceal carry licenses to carry guns, and they say that they're going to do it because they both received threats and they're worried about the security, especially when they go back to their home districts. They can't carry them here in D.C., but they can back in their home districts, and they're going to start to do that. Shuler says he's even encouraging his young staffers to get permits like this to carry weapons. And Tuchel says, look, if you do that, you're going to have to ensure that they have gun safety training, other firearms training, that they know how to handle stressful and dangerous situations. He says that's kind of a tall order for a 20-something young staffer on the Hill to take on that kind of responsibility in addition to their other job. So asking your aide to do that, according to Bill Pickle, might be a little bit much, but you know, he understands, and a lot of other people understand, why these congressmen would want to take steps to protect themselves. These two congressmen in particular clearly know their way around a handgun and know how to use it properly. But there's all sorts of debate now as to whether, you know, this could have been stopped more quickly or not if other people in the audience there had had guns. You know, there's also a school of thought that says, look, if you have a gun and you start to shoot the attacker, what if other people amid this chaos also want to help and they pull out their gun and they see a couple of people shooting and they don't know who the bad guy is? I mean, in these chaotic situations, there's all sorts of things that can go wrong if different people have guns. So that debate is certainly not going to end anytime soon.
Well, and thank goodness, knock on wood, this hasn't been an enormous problem. And it seems like if you're congressional and you're trying to reach out to people, are people going to come wherever they think everyone's packing, for goodness sakes?
That's right. You know, it's really, it's one of those things, especially in certain states that are conservative and who, I guess, adhere more to the gun culture in this country, where they are very sensitive about this. And they said, you know, look, we have a right to have these firearms. A lot of us know how to use them, and we can better protect ourselves if we have them. And there's not much of an argument you can make when someone knows how to use a firearm, but you know, when you throw all sorts of intangibles into this mix, when there's a chaotic situation, when people are going nuts, when people are screaming, and people are running around, I mean, that throws a whole lot of that out the window, and you just don't know how some people are going to react, and all of this is now being talked about. I mean, the ironic thing is, you know, some of these congressmen have taken to having events like the one that Gabrielle Giffords had on Saturday. That this was kind of an event where people would just kind of file by and talk to her, yeah, you know, rather than the town hall meeting, because they were afraid that the town hall meetings were getting kind of out of control.
Right.
People were getting too combative, and they were a little bit concerned about, you know, any outburst that might turn violent at those meetings. So, you know, she has this event, and look what happened.
You're reporting today on the fairly extraordinary comments coming from Sarah Palin. She posted it on our Facebook page. She's not really backing down much, is she?
Not backing down much. I mean, she does sound a real note of conciliation as far as just, you know, wanting people to focus on the healing process and thinking about the victims. She does spend a lot of time in her statement, a fairly lengthy statement, talking about that, and she does that right out of the gate. She does, though, then get she goes on the defensive and talks about people who have criticized her unfairly for being somehow a part of this equation. You know, she has come in for some criticism, some of it unfair, linking her rhetoric on the campaign trail, and of course there's a lot made of those the graphic with the crosshairs that that she and her allies put out as far as targeting some candidates in the midterm elections. And a lot of this is not fair to her. I mean, a lot of it is linking her to what happened on Saturday, you have to say, has been irresponsible. But people are saying that the increasingly heated rhetoric, the vitriol in the political sphere right now, has contributed to the overall atmosphere, especially in places like Arizona, where it is a very kind of volatile place politically right now. So she felt the need to come out now and address some of these things, and took her obligatory shot at the media and others for linking her to this, which I think you can say was fair. What was a little bit strange was her mention of the phrase blood libel when talking about, you know, journalists and pundits' criticism of her. Blood libel is an odd use of a term that has been used historically inaccurately to describe Jews, you know, sacrificing people. This was used during the time of the Holocaust in an effort to impugn the Jewish community in Europe. It's a very strange use of the term. We've tried to ask why she used that term, and her representatives are not commenting on that. We're not sure why she used it, where she got it. There was a column in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago where a columnist used the term, and we know she reads the Wall Street Journal, but there's no evidence that she took it from there. It's just kind of an odd use of a term that is very offensive to some people.
One of the really, and we were talking before we started, but one of the remarkable things about this, oftentimes we see these kinds of shootings happen and they'll talk to, you guys talk to friends and neighbors and things like that, and people will say, oh, you know, this everybody, I haven't seen anybody quoted. In fact, you were saying that one of his college professors was afraid of even turning his back. This guy seemed like a pretty dangerous guy.
Yeah, and this is this is what a lot of it is coming around to, is that this was a lone lunatic who was, you know, just a loose cannonball, a loose cannon ready to go off at any moment. I mean, it's a bad term to use maybe in the context here, but he clearly had problems. He had mental and emotional issues. Just about everyone who we've talked to in the days since this happened has described him in similar terms, that they saw him kind of dropping off as far as his level of coherence and his ability to get along with people in recent years. They noticed this. And, as we mentioned, his college professors, at least one of them said he was afraid to even turn his back on him in class.
Oh, God.
At certain points. I mean, this is a guy who was just, you know, he had gone under some people's radar, but he wasn't beyond everyone's radar. There were signs that this guy was very unstable. And, of course, the tragedy is, in retrospect, that, you know, not enough was done to mitigate him.
Well, and I've even seen Slate did a piece this morning about, hold on, do we need to take steps to actually take, I think actually New Republic did a piece where they said, do we need to take people that we believe are dangerous to other people and have some ways of taking them off the streets? It seems like that may be the next phase of this kind of, as we assess what happened.
A very good question to ask in this whole thing. I mean, you know, there are people now who would probably say that Jared Loughner should have been taken off the streets months or years ago. And that's going to be part of this. I mean, yes, there will be people who will call for that sort of thing. But, you know, a lot of civil libertarians and others will say, wait a minute, you are really treading on some dangerous ground. And you're talking about stepping on someone's rights to move freely in our society when they don't have a criminal record. We have to remember this guy, he had run-ins with the law, and he had minor arrests for different things, but his record was not it wasn't all that lengthy, and he did pass a gun check when he bought his firearm. So it's a very it's just some sticky territory to maneuver in when you're talking about trying to safeguard the public.